Find the stillness. Find the essence. Where do we find this harmony, this beauty? James Luther Adams, one of the great Unitarian theologians of the mid-20th century, said that people come to churches for ultimacy and intimacy. What did he mean by that? First of all, when he said people, he meant us. We come to church for ultimacy and intimacy. This is what I'd like to address today. The two main reasons we come to a religious community. We need a place to wonder about what is ultimate. What is the source of all, the engine of creation? And we need intimacy, which is community, where we're seen and heard, received and respected for who we are, and where we offer the same gift to others. We come to church to question, to this church, to question, to understand and to know and to think about the big questions and issues that affect us. Those ultimate questions, those ultimate considerations. The largest of those is, what is that unifying principle of creation? Is there God? Or what can I rely on? What is the foundation that I can rest on? What is the biggest permanent in life? Now, the different religions and faiths of the world answer this, as you know, in many different ways. Monotheistic religions such as Christianity and Islam and Judaism will say that God, Allah, Jehovah, is the ultimate, unchanging power of the universe. Taoists would say, look to nature. That is where the greatest wisdoms and insights are to be found, in the natural world, in the interplay of the seasons, and in the balances between hot and cold, growth and decay. In 1841, Theodore Parker, an American transcendentalist and a Unitarian minister, delivered an address to the graduating class of Harvard Divinity School called The Transient and Permanent in Christianity. And what he was addressing is that ultimate question. What is the permanent? What is that unchanging truth in the Christian religion? Now, without going into an extended history lesson here, suffice it to say that he was responding to a debate at the time that he spoke, when the Orthodox Christians were saying, our way is the way, the only way. Our traditions are the only traditions. Our interpretations are the only true way. Unitarians, as we all know, have always questioned tradition. Parker did just that by asking, well, what is the truth here? What has changed in tradition over time, and what has changed? And what has not changed? He offered his analysis and said that traditions and interpretations of what is ultimate have changed throughout history. Each generation, each culture finds their own response. But for him, there is something that is permanent, something that does not change. For Parker, it was the pure teachings of Jesus, love, the love of man and the love of God. Now today, we're asking the same sort of theological question. Is there a central aspect of creation that is permanent? What can we put our faith in? Now my own evolving theology began with its roots in Taoism, and then it arrived at process theology. But on the way, it journeyed through Buddhism, paganism, Christianity, and I'm just a typical Unitarian. At 13, I stood alone on that bluff overlooking the Okanagan Lake, and I encountered in that moment a depth of silence that had no limit, and which opened my heart, my mind, my curiosity to the mysteries that lay just behind everyday life, everyday awareness. This moment struck a note that I've been listening to ever since. Along the way, I've been drawn towards nature and beauty and a philosophy of living that the Taoists described thousands of years ago. I was drawn to the wisdom of the Tao Te Ching, its encouragement in particular for reflection, learning, change, and growth. Its underlying theology is that the only constant in life is change itself, and that each of us has the capability to make different choices and thus transform our lives with wisdom. Now, my experience of Taoism was missing the human element, that human journey. And it was through my work as an actor and a teacher of actors and in my own personal work, growth work, that I came to have a profound love and respect for our messy, noble humanness. And then one day I discovered this theology, which put all of this together and put a name on it, and I've mentioned it already, process theology or process theology, that blends together that early attraction to Taoism, the law of nature and reflection, and my experience of human evolution through the creative impulse. And it's not surprising that as an artist, I was and am attracted to a theology that calls the ultimate reality creative interchange. Now, let me describe process theology a bit. Process theology says that our existence is made up of events, of moments, a series of events, a series of moments. These moments are in time and are affected by all the moments that have come before. And they are affected, changed, and transformed by the interactions that they have with every other moment. These moments are not static. There is a moment, an event in time, and then, like snow on the water, though quicker, it's gone. Followed by another, and another, and another. Imagine you are a series of these moments, reaching right back to your conception. And a single line, if you will, of a billion, billion, billion moments. But this line of your personal moments is in the world, which means that your moments are being affected by all these other moments. The moments of all living things, nature, animals, other people. There is a blending then, as these moments, they are not solid, like in the poem I read earlier. Don't think that you have your skin as a wall, right? Your present moment is porous and is then affected by all the other billion moments around you. In process theology, Alfred North Whitehead would say that God, or the ultimate, is that process, is affecting it and being affected by it. Okay? An interplay. And if you cringe from the word God, I understand. I just let him imagine here that God in this series of events is not a personal God. It's not a person, right? God here is the natural evolving process of life, the interplay of these moments, the relational dance, the inherent process of transformation in the events of time. In process theology, the ultimate is the process of transformation. It is the co-creative dance of life. Whitehead would say, the misconception which has haunted philosophic literature throughout the centuries is the notion of independent existence. There is no such mode of existence, he says. Every entity is to be understood in terms of the way it is interwoven with the rest of the universe. Process theology sees the world as creating itself, moment by moment, choice by choice, unfolding from the first moment to the edge of now. Everything affects everything. The sum of everything is greater than the parts, because together there is something more, says Whitehead. There is a pull, a momentum, an attraction that is the force of this unfolding universe. Our unity, our sense of unity, comes from this evolutionary movement. In Matthew, from the Christian Bible, 18:20, Christ says, "Where two or more are gathered, there I am." I am is a name for God. The am in the I am is the action, the verb, the binding, dynamic creativity of life. Martin Buber, Jewish theologian and philosopher, says that in the I-thou relationship, there is a space between the I and the thou, which is holy. That space between us right now, this space between us where your unfolding moment commingles with mine, every choice you make affects everyone around you, affects me, the people beside you, and their choices are affecting you. This is the ultimate alive in the present moment, the holy present, ever-changing moment. Now, in the rehearsal room, which through much of my life was very holy ground and treated so, we would say that when actors were working, two actors playing a scene together, the story is found in the space between. Okay? Not inside the individual, but in what is happening between them. Again, it's that encountering, that commingling, the opportunity for change and transformation that is the important event. Now, each of these examples describes an invisible dynamic that the process theologians like Whitehead described as creative, the creative process. Right? Because you don't know what is going to happen in the next moment. And you, in that present moment right now, have the power to make a choice. And your choice will be affected by the other, and so forth. So this interplay is what is creative. Henry Nelson Wyman, Unitarian and philosopher of religion, signer of the Second Humanist Manifesto, said, "Nothing can transform man unless it operates in the human life, or in human life. Therefore, in human life, in the actual processes of human existence, must be found the saving and transforming power which religious inquiry seeks and which faith must apprehend." It's Wyman, building on the work of Whitehead, who introduces the concept of creative interchange. That's his contribution. He says, "Man is made for creative transformation as a bird is made for flight." Creative interchange occurs, according to Dr. Wyman, when the individual finds one or more persons with whom he or she can engage in that kind of interchange which creates in each an awareness of the original experience of the other person. I'll describe that in a bit. Now, this is a process that I know and I trust in. In fact, I would believe in it. This process, when two or more people are gathered to deeply listen to and respond from open, inquiring hearts, is one of the most meaningful, transformative, and saving experiences I believe that human beings can have. We are part of this process in every moment. But there are those special and rare moments when we, for a moment, are fully aware of what is happening. It might be in a conversation with a friend or a loved one when gently or suddenly the connection between the two of you shifts, deepens, and you are no longer just talking about your lives. You are talking from your life, and you are being heard and met and fully received by that other listener. And it seems as if the air in the room shifts and there's a sense that some unknown, unexpected presence or expectation or deep knowing enters. Now, Buddhists would say that's when the both of the people present are fully present. Whitehead would say that that's when the two entities have become lured by the beauty of the creative process of the universe. Now, I began by quoting James Luther Adams, who said that people come to church for reasons of ultimacy and intimacy. Ultimacy is the search for that ultimate question, that seek ultimate answers. And I've suggested that one such ultimate response to ultimate questions of reality is the response of the process theologians, who say that ultimate reality is this creative interchange. And here, then, is that bridge to the second reason that people come to church, the desire for intimacy. I believe that the lure toward intimacy, and I don't mean sexual intimacy right now, I mean that moment I just described when two or more people become aware of their full creative choice making participation in the moment. Okay? That full creative choice making participation in the moment. The lure towards intimacy is part of this very same process. You may know this experience if you've ever been in the presence of a great artist. For a musician, for example, who through his devotion and discipline is able to capture you and the whole audience and hold you through his talent and everyone's desire and choice to be caught up in it, holds you in that same moment together so that you and everyone around you experiences an intimate unity through the beauty of his artistry. I'd like to think that everyone here has had a moment like that. This lure towards beauty is what some call God, others creative interchange. It is important that we pay attention to why people come to church if we want to build this community. If you come needing moments of ultimacy and intimacy, then as a religious community, we need to provide opportunities for offering these moments to us and everyone that comes through our door. That's why I'm really excited right now that Beacon is moving towards setting up chalice circles. In my experience, it is in these small group settings, which are committed to a process of deep listening and open honest explorations where both the needs of ultimacy and intimacy are met. Chalice circles, or some call them covenant groups, are also known as small group ministry. The structure, it's been around for a long time, but especially in the last 10 years or so, the model has been honed and refined. We now know that these groups serve our need for inspiration, connection, and community in ways that cannot be met on a Sunday morning or in a coffee hour. We can meet our desire for deep and meaningful conversation fostered in an atmosphere of respect and appreciation. It's also known that when a congregation includes small group ministry, they're taking the most important and effective step towards meeting the needs of their community. And when they do that, they are also taking the most important and effective step towards building their community. When you want to grow a community, you've got to build from the foundations, the roots up. Then when the stories on top get built, they'll be secure and they'll have the energetic infrastructure to support them. In my previous life as an acting teacher, I was deeply, deeply moved by the desires of young people to learn how to communicate. It seems like we don't teach that in the schools. They deeply wanted to be seen and heard for who they were. This is a basic human need, to be seen and to be heard. They didn't want to be judged. In The Complete Guide to Small Group Ministry, Alan Ward asks his students at the University of Arkansas, what do you personally want most in your own communication? And the most frequent answer, regardless of age, was to find another human being to talk with without barriers or reservations. When he asked his group of university students what sort of religious community they desired, they said they would want a community with the following characteristics. And I'm just going to mention a few of them. And these are not necessarily church-going people. They would want members of the community to like each other, to trust each other. They would like members who can talk about everything without arguing, taking unchangeable positions, or trying to convince or dominate. A community that can look at the cosmic aspects of existence and at the same time deal with the hourly details. A community that can explore the accumulated experiences of human beings over millennia and glean the best aspects. A community that is a supportive group that considers the various forms of reverence, learning, and self-insightfulness without drawing conclusions. And a community that is made up of every kind of diversity, appreciating differences rather than being threatened. So does this sound like anything you know? It's obviously what we're already doing here as a Unitarian community. These are the things that we care about, that we are actively creating, or we are in the process of becoming. Small group ministry, or chalice circles as we're going to be calling them, is a process to encourage the growth of just this kind of community. The purpose of chalice circles is to provide a sense of intimacy and community for everyone. Groups provide a place for spiritual exploration and growth. In an environment where people are encouraged and supported in the sharing of their stories, experiences, ideas, and feelings, that's when they are able to grow spiritually. The program that we are using has been designed by the Reverend Christine Robinson. She is the minister of one of the largest UU churches in the States, and Alicia Hawkins, her collaborator. Some of the subjects that we'll talk about and explore are thick stories, compassion, boundaries, shadow, prayer, resilience, aging, play. Today, after the service, you have an opportunity to sign up to become part of one of these chalice circles. I hope you feel moved and excited to do so. The chalice circles will have between 6 and 10 participants, and we will do our very, very best to provide a variety of times in the week or weekends, evening and daytime, to suit your needs. They meet twice a month and will start in January and end in June. They are designed to bring forth ideas, explore issues, and raise questions that will allow you to go deeper in your own thinking, an opportunity to hear others and explore and share. And perhaps as you begin to experience what it is like to be deeply seen and heard, you will also experience the beauty of that creative interchange. To risk discovering and communicating our personal truth, which is the exciting potential in a chalice circle, is a step towards creating more beauty in the world. That in itself is a kind of salvation. Chalice circles, I hope, will be the next piece in the evolution of beloved Beacon Unitarian Church. May it be so.